Good morning. Please be seated. This is Williams v. State, case number 69661. Counsel, if we're ready to go for appellants, you're up first. Ms. Nagles? And for the record, just please state your name, and if you wish to reserve any time, please so state.
Good morning, Justices. My name is Mihaela Niagos, and I represent Mr. Williams this morning. I would like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal. The main issue in this case is the fact that this case is about nonviolent sex offenders that have to submit to a psychosexual evaluation prior to sentencing. And in case of nonviolent sex offenders, there are no standardized tools to assess their risk of recidivism. Mr. Williams is in prison today. He has been sentenced to prison, and it's unclear whether he was sentenced to prison because a psychosexual evaluation that was not based on accepted standards of assessment found him to be a high risk to reoffend, or because another evaluation that didn't have any tools to assess him either used evidence that is out there stating that as a group, child pornographers are considered to be a low risk to reoffend. What we know, though, is that Mr. Williams is today in prison, and the court, in rendering his sentencing, decided to include into the pre-sentence investigation report two psychosexual evaluations that are contradictory, that use different tools to assess Mr. Williams' level of or risk to reassess, but neither of them use any standardized tools for the assessment of recidivism for child pornographers, because there aren't any.
Well, so your argument really is with the statute, that the statute requires a psychosexual evaluation, which in the case of a nonviolent child pornographer is not available.
That is correct. And because this, it is impossible for...
So what's the remedy? Should he not be sentenced? I mean, how does that...
Child pornographers should be treated like any other crime for which probation is available. This still gives the district court discretion to look at other factors that are out there, such as retribution or rehabilitation, all the other factors that are available out there to determine whether child pornographers should receive probation or should go to prison. But they should not have to rely on unreliable evidence and unreliable science that is out there in rendering their decision.
So if we were to credit your argument about the statute, then neither psych evaluation should have been admitted or considered. Is that your position?
At the time that those three evaluations were considered, there were no standardized tests. And my understanding is that the science is the process in coming up with a test that is validated and is generally acceptable in the community. Because at that time there wasn't one, none of them should have been considered. And the court should have just exercised its discretion in sentencing Mr. Williams, but should not have based it on this information that did not raise to the level of scientific evidence. Under the Nevada sentencing scheme, diagnostic tools are a mandatory component. And the way district court decided to reconcile the fact that there are no diagnostic tools is to go to a Nevada Supreme Court, Blackburn v. State, in which the court has decided that it is permissible to depart from actuarial tools that are in place and use your professional opinion to render an opinion that basically departs from the results of those actuarial tools.
Counsel, you're making part of your argument, I guess, we're looking at whether or not these statutes anyway violate due process, but also the secondary issues, whether or not they are prejudicial in any way. How is this prejudicial to your client?
This is prejudicial to my client because his only opportunity in this whole system to address any issues and problems with his sentencing and with his pre-sentence investigation report is at the time of sentencing. And he filed a motion to strike, and he repeatedly asked the court to strike information in the PSI because the psychosexual evaluation is attached to the PSI, that was his opportunity to have that information stricken and not part of the record.
Well, but the fact that he wants it stricken and not part of the record still goes to the underlying fact. How is that prejudicial to the defendant in this case?
It is unclear from the record whether the court sentenced Mr. Williams because it exercised its discretion and it was and still allowed the Piasecki evaluation, the one that considered him to be a low risk to reoffend, or whether the court sentenced him to prison because of the Hicks and Renestal evaluation, that one that used an impermissible tool and was outright false.
I guess, Mr. Mayor, my concern is this. Judge Russell has the case. Mr. Williams chose to plead guilty. I know your office would have advised him, here's a range of sentences. We'll ask for probation, but it's up to the discretion of the judge. In this case, the judge decided, I think it was a 5-to-life sentence he gave him, but that's within the range of sentencing, and usually we don't disturb that. I mean, as long as it's not outside the statutory ranges, the court has always, or not always, but I think most of the time, is deferred to the discretion of the district court. So how do we deal with that, since we can't read the judge's mind as far as what criteria he used to make the sentence?
The court, in the Blackmun opinion, the court remanded the case for an evidentiary hearing because it was unclear from the record whether the court found the psychosexual evaluations that were provided in that case comported with the currently accepted standard of assessment. The sentencing judge in this court adopted both evaluations. They are contradictory. There is no way to know which one is the one that sent Mr. Williams to prison. Was it the court's discretion, or was it the Hicks and Renestal evaluation?
So your interpretation of Blackburn is that there was error the way the district court handled this. Is that correct?
Procedurally, if we look at Blackburn procedurally, there was error in the court's determination.
Well, Blackburn affirmed the sentence.
It is correct, but only after an evidentiary hearing where the court made specific findings as to why the psychosexual evaluation that was used comported with a current standard of evaluation.
But Blackburn noted that there were specific findings and that as to the other issues, the record supported the district court's decision and affirmed on that basis. I mean, that's what it says.
Right.
So why would we not do the same thing here?
Because in the Blackburn opinion, there was consensus from the both evaluators that there are some tools out there that they may use. And based on those tools, they may depart, but they have to make specific findings and explain their decisions on, it has to be scientifically based why they want to depart from those actuarial tools. There's nothing to depart from in this case. Hicks and Renestal used what is called a sexual violent risk assessment in assessing Mr. Williams. That is an impermissible tool because it has not been validated in any non-violent sexual cases. And the fundamental error that Hicks and Renestal committed was to treat this as a violent sex offense, which it was not. On the other side, Dr. Piasecki stated there aren't any tests out there. I'm not going to apply anything because nothing has been validated, but I can tell you that as a group, child pornographers are at a low risk to reoffend. And we don't have any risk factors out there that are validated by science that we can use to explain whether Mr. Williams has any of those traits that will make him a high risk to reoffend. He is a low risk to reoffend.
But the district judge's findings on the record articulated the reasons the district judge imposed the sentence he did, and they in no way appeared to rely on Dr. Piasecki's high-risk evaluation, did they?
And it's Dr. Hicks and Renestal who...
I mean, I'm sorry, I've got them backwards, but...
What is interesting...
The state's expert, yeah.
I understand. What is interesting
is... Did the district court judge rely on Dr. H's...
He did. He did, and it's very clear from the record because trial counsel repeatedly renewed her motion to strike the the Hicks and Benestal evaluation. If the court chose not to consider that evaluation, it would have stricken it from the record, or it would have made it clear that I am disconsidering this evaluation. What is troubling is that adding those two evaluations to the PSI creates no guidance, and there's no certainty in the future what will happen at a parole violation hearing, at a parole hearing, because Mr. Williams is in prison. When he has to be reassessed, are we to assume from these evaluations that have been accepted by the sentencing court that, that it's okay to use these improper tools, and when Mr. Williams is to be reassessed again, he will be found a high risk, basically on pure speculation or junk science? Related to the constitutional issues that I've addressed, there is a due process protection for anyone that when their life, liberty, or property is at risk, that it cannot be taken for arbitrary reasons, and because we don't have a test in place. The evaluations that are conducted today invite to these arbitrary results because there is no way to tell what one evaluator will decide over the other.
That particular line, you still have to make a connection that you're not making in terms of prejudicial. These tests are accepted tests. They're not specifically designed for the charges before us, but they have some informational value. So, again, the argument that partly that I'm looking for, and I can only speak for myself, is talking in terms of the prejudice. Were any of these findings, anything that was presented so prejudicial, so wrong, that the court should take notice that it would violate due process? Or as you're saying, no, the tests weren't as accurate as they should be, but the court can consider what's appropriate out of them. That's what we're looking for, if you can give us something.
Well, the court doesn't have the knowledge to assess whether Mr. Williams is a high risk or low risk to reoffense. So the way the statute is created is he is, has access to this, it's supposed to be knowledge that is not available to him, that is only available to an expert in terms of deciding whether he is a high or low risk to reoffend. He needs to, the evaluators need to come up with these tests. It's mandatory under the statute, but if they are plain wrong, the court should not even have to be made aware of them. And this is the prejudice that was caused here, because there is a standard of evidence to be, it cannot be highly suspect or impalpable. And in this case, both evaluations were, because they did not comport with the statute. They did not use any tools that were validated and that were generally acceptable.
You're under your rebuttal time at this point, so if you wish to save it.
Thank you.
On behalf of the state.
Good morning, Justices. Tyson Leake, Carson City District Attorney's Office, on behalf of Respondent.
What's your name for the record, please?
Tyson Leake. Thank you. The analysis in this case should mirror that of Blackburn v. State. In Blackburn, this court parsed out the language of NRS 176.139 that establishes the requirements for psychosexual evaluations. In doing so, it took the plain language of the statute and determined that diagnostic tools must be utilized, but that are generally accepted for the evaluation of sex offenders. Appellant in this case argues that a specific tool directly related to internet-only child pornographers need be used, but that is not the standard. That is the same analysis that was present in the Blackburn case. The use of the SVR-20 combined with the clinical judgment of Dr. Hicks and Brennenstahl is what led to her recommendation of a high risk to reoffend. There is nothing wrong with that in accordance with the statute. She followed the requirements.
But I think her point is that the test was not scientifically established as appropriate evaluative tool for a child pornographer.
I would agree that that is the appellant's point. However, I disagree that that is a problem in the sense that the statute only requires a generally accepted tool for sex offenders, period. It does not require a specific tool to the offense. Therefore, what the clinician chooses to utilize that they believe will influence their opinion as best and give them an insight into the psychological picture of this particular individual is up to their clinical judgment. This is why we establish that there are requirements for those that can perform the psychosexual evaluations and specifically enumerate those and what they must consider, specifically being a comprehensive clinical interview with the individual, as well as a review of all investigative reports and any victim statements. In this case, that is exactly what Dr. Hickson Brennenstahl did. She reviewed the investigative reports. She had an interview with Mr. Williams. And in doing that interview, she chose two tools that she felt would give her a picture of his psychological development. In doing that, she coupled those results with her clinical judgment and came to a recommendation to the court that he was a high risk to reoffend. And the factors that she alleged led to that were a combinement of the narcissistic personality traits that she identified, as well as the method in which he went about the crime. It was over an extended period of time, a number of years. It was also repeated activity. She noted that he told her that he did this on average a few hours a week. These all led to her belief that recidivism was likely for Mr. Williams, and that was the basis of her recommendation. With regard to the Piasecki evaluation, the court, in following the Blackburn decision, did what the court should have done. It held a hearing. It heard from the defense expert as to their evaluation, and it made a decision. Justice Douglas brought up a good point when appellant was speaking as to how the defendant may have been prejudiced in this instance. We submit that there was no prejudice to the defendant. Mr. Williams was granted the benefit of a secondary evaluation. His expert was allowed to testify at the sentencing and present her findings and her critique of the Hickson Brennenstahl evaluation. The court accepted both and, in fact, asked for two PSIs. This, in turn, granted the court the liberty to grant probation if it so desired and chose not to. In fact, the court specifically enumerated when it issued its sentence that it was sentencing the defendant because of review of everything in the record, the way the images were obtained, the volume of the images obtained or put into the system or made available through the system, the choice to use this type of system that shared child pornography with others, the violations of children's innocence, the sheer volume of images over the period of time, the thoughtful compliance and repetitive behavior, and the choice of a system designed to conceal his identity. The court made a very clear record as to why it chose to sentence Mr. Williams as it did. With regard to the constitutional arguments of a substantive due process claim, one does not exist here. If any argument is made, the appellant fails to establish a fundamental right that is infringed upon in this instance. Absent a fundamental right infringed upon, it's a rational basis test. The rational basis in this is that there is a legitimate government interest in protecting the community from convicted sex offenders that may be of high risk to reoffend. And this is rationally related to that end. They have a professional conduct an evaluation that then gives the court guidance and either prohibits or allows probation based on the likelihood of reoffense in the opinion of that expert. With regard to equal protection, it's the same analysis. There's no protected class that is asserted that this individual is a member of. Therefore, we again fall to a rational basis test, and the argument again fails, as this is a legitimate government interest that is rationally related to this statute and the ends that the legislature has attempted to achieve. Unless the justices have any further questions, I thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Counselor, rebuttal.
There is a legitimate government interest in accurate information. The courts don't even have the power to exercise their discretion in sentencing someone if an evaluation comes back saying that an individual is a high risk to reoffend. Because somebody, an attorney who carefully read the evaluation by Hickson Brennestall and her own description of the tools that she used, she was able to raise this issue and to file a motion to strike, which led in this case to a new evaluation to be done. At the forefront of both of these evaluations should have been the premise that the science is not backing us up. There are no standards. But those were not in the evaluations. This only came across the day of sentencing when Dr. Piasecki took the stand and she read a letter that was submitted to the court the day of sentencing by Hickson Brennestall, where she said, oh, by the way, there are no tests to apply. So there is a legitimate interest, and there is something extremely serious that everybody has to consider on the side of the defendants, of the district court judge that is losing important rights of using their discretion based on faulty science, and on the part of the state as well. Child pornography is a crime that makes a lot of people uncomfortable, and this is why we go to science to decide whether there truly is a risk to reoffend. We don't pick and choose factors that we believe that may influence our decision because this is something that the court can do in exercising their discretion, but this is not something that the experts are allowed to do because they have to use diagnostic tools, because they have to use the science that is out there and not merely their gut. What was done in this case is basically analogous to using a thermometer to measure the pressure of a tire, to measure the tire pressure. And this is not permissible. And this is why it's highly suspect and impalpable evidence, and it has to be dealt with. And this is the main issue in this case. Mr. Williams was prejudiced. He was prejudiced at sentencing because he used his only resource that was available to him, which was strike evidence that was highly suspect and impalpable. And his motion was denied. It was denied several times. And by a stroke of luck, an attorney that was effective and asked for an evaluation, a new one was attached. But the confusion is still there, and it's lingering, and it's following him in the prison system. Thank you.
Thank you. The court thanks both counsel for their spirited argument this morning and clarifying their positions as to the representations made in this appeal. This appeal will stand submitted. The court stands in recess.